Assess Mat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
This is the Brad Sesmat Show here on Sports 360, AZ.com, AZCentralSports.com. I, of course, am not Brad Sesmat. I am Paula Bovin. We are going to catch up with Brad in just a second, and I'm hoping it goes smoothly. I've had one of those days. I walk into the studios. I totally drop my drink on the floor. I've been, the last couple weeks, it's like stay away from Paula. And let me tell you this, before I sort of get into Brad, we're going to go to the combine in a second. Teams are telling me not to come to their sporting events now. Here's why. I go to ASU, Bobby Hurley's opener. They lose to Sacramento State. I go to Grand Canyon basketball, which I've not been ever. They end a 12-game streak. Dan Marley's basically telling me not to come back to that thing again. U of A, I go down to that place for the first time this season. Yep, that home streak of 49 games ends. That was against Oregon. I thought it was over. I thought this curse was done. Coyotes tell me to come on out. Come, let's do this story on Louis Domingue, their great goalie. Yep, he gives up 2 goals in about 4 minutes. He gets pulled. So I just, you guys stay away from me today because something bad vibe, bad karma is going on. All right, now, but I want to talk positive things here. As I mentioned, we're going to talk to Brad Sesmat in a second. I love the NFL Combine. I love that it's a big deal. I love that it's getting televised. So we're going to catch up with Brad. But we're also going to talk to Arizona State's offensive coordinator, Chip Lindsey. I got a ton of questions from him, for him, especially when you look at what happened with ASU last season, what it's going to be like this year, what can we expect from that offense? First, though, I want to go to Brad Sesmat. I want to check in at the NFL Combine. I want to find out what's going on and talk a little Cardinals and some other things. How you doing, Brad Sesmat?
Paul, I'm great. It is a miserable day outside here in Indianapolis. Rain, mix of snow, bad weather. But inside here, it is warm. It's cozy. It's always nice when you have a football team that is not drafting in the top three. I think you and I would agree on that. And the Cardinals this year are drafting 29th overall. And today we've already talked with Steve Keim. We'll be scheduled to talk to Bruce Arians here in a little while. We'll be bringing plenty of content here throughout the show on things out here. It's pretty cool when you bump into a guy like Dirk Cutter, the former ASU coach, or you see Ozzie Newsome or Jason Garrett or Rex Ryan or Todd Bowles is bumping around here, John Schneider from the Seahawks. And it's like a who's who of people. John Elway is scheduled to talk here tomorrow. This morning, Kevin Colbert of the Steelers, Jack Del Rio, Gary Kubiak of the Broncos was here. So you see all these coaches come and go and having access to them and just spending time picking brains. It's that time, though, where they're not going to tell you who they're going to draft and they're not going to tell you who it is that they really have their eye on. So it's a lot of fun back here.
Did you get a sense? You just listened to Keim. I mean, did he give you anything? I know you mentioned these guys don't say anything. We're all thinking pass rusher. This is what the team needs. Did he give you any idea of what they're looking at this combine?
Okay, so there's a couple things here, and one of them is Steve's ability to go find that diamond in the rough, so to speak. You know, the J.J. Nelsons and the Rodney Gunters and that. He didn't talk defensive linemen by names, but here's a little bit of Steve Keim at the podium a short time ago here at the combine on what he is looking for and what his philosophies are in coming into the combine. So Keim there, Paula, talking about it. And what I like about Steve is his openness, saying that, look, I don't have all the answers. I've missed on guys. You know, there was questions put to him about DJ Humphreys, you know, last year, a first round pick that didn't produce for the Cardinals, at least on the field that we saw. But he's a young player. They had Bobby Massey there last season. You don't want to say that they missed on a first-round pick yet. I'm not saying that. I don't know if you feel that way. But I feel like it's good to have a young guy that you can bring along and mold. And so he didn't play much, but you know this as well as anybody. Look at the other draft picks that did play a bunch for the Cardinals last season, the Marcus Goldens and J.J. Nelsons and David Johnsons. Right, you know, there's Rodney Gunters. There's four guys right there after DJ Humphreys that did produce for them last year.
No, they did. It's true. And I think if you're going to weigh what Keim has done, the good and the bad, it's certainly the scales tip with the good. I mean, there's been some mistakes with this team. Is there any talk around there about the quarterback class this year? I'm one of those who are a little intrigued if the Cardinals would pursue a quarterback. Is there much buzz at all about what the talent is like there?
Well, it's funny. I'm going through my notes here because I did spend some time this morning. You know, and you know how it is. You can't say who, but there's right. several people that you can spend time with away from it. And I think the overwhelming feel about the quarterbacks is that Carson Wentz from North Dakota State is probably the top quarterback prospect this year. It's 6'5 and a quarter, 235 pounds, a native of Bismarck, North Dakota. I think from what I'm hearing, it's Wentz, it's Jared Goff, then it's Paxton Lynch. Those are probably the top three. And with the Titans having the number one overall pick, Paula, they already have Marcus Mariota. So they're looking at Tunsil, the offensive lineman from Mississippi, the way that it sounds right now. This is not the big quarterback class that you would see. There's no Andrew Luck that is sitting there on the horizon, or even last year with what we saw out of the first couple of picks at quarterback. I think there is a buyer beware, though, mentality from these coaches and general managers about, yeah, you should go get a quarterback in the first round. Just look what happened to Johnny Manziel. Look at what has happened to guys like Jake Locker, Blaine Gabbert. You can go on and on of the quarterback misses, even with the Cardinals with Matt Leinart years ago. So I think the quarterback class, not the deepest this year. Sure. Those players are scheduled to get here later in the week. So I think the buzz around the Cardinals today in talking with them was more about players on the roster. Chris Johnson, get into him in a second. Tyrann Mathieu, Steve Keim said he's working well over with Brett Fisher. Not so much about players that are a part of the combine here today. More about the overview of the organization.
You know, you mentioned Chris Johnson and talk about great moves by the Cardinals. I think there are a lot of teams out there that, you know, despite the injury, wish they had gone that route. Did he offer any insight on where Chris is right now?
Okay, so, and we'll hear from him here in a second on Chris Johnson. Just a little bit more to that, Paula. 814 yards, 3 touchdowns, went knocked out after 11 games with a knee injury. Chris Johnson was on Sirius XM saying he wants to return to the Cardinals. I asked Steve Keim about Chris Johnson. This was earlier. And so you hear Keim there talking about wanting to meet with the representatives. Chris Johnson says he'd like to return. He really likes what the Cardinals are all about, that he's talked with Bruce Arians. He's talked with Stump Mitchell. Likes the fact that the Cardinals were the team that went after him last year when he was at his lowest. One of his quotes was, "I feel like at this point in my career, I'm not really chasing money." It's really interesting. I think the other side of that, though, is if you bring Chris Johnson back and you bring David Johnson back, which, of course, you're going to, Andre Ellington has been injury prone. And Steve did talk about that today, that, look, Andre Ellington wants money, but he can't stay healthy and be on the field. So I think back here, that's a concern. Your colleague Kent Summers dutifully noted that of those three running backs, none of them are special teams guys, right, so to speak. So you look at taking three roster spots and none of them are kick return guys. I think that's a concern. But, yeah, they're going to meet with Chris Johnson's representatives back here this week.
You know, Ellington is one of those guys, and he always seems to me just to do enough to kind of keep his job for all Chris Johnson and Dave Johnson has done. We know what Ellington can do, and despite his injuries, he would always step up with a big play. Obviously, his receiving abilities, just how much better he got over the course of the season. That's going to be an interesting storyline that's going to play out, and I'm glad you have that access to those guys with the Cardinals. I'm curious how much access you're getting right now. I love that this event I mentioned before is a made-for-TV event.
Sure.
Are you on the sidelines? Do you get to see all the workouts? How much access do you have to players, do you think? What's it going to be like?
So when you come here, you don't get down on the field. You don't get the access to see them do their 40-yard dashes. It's like a row after row of media from around the world, really, that want to check in on respective teams. There's a few of us here with the Arizona Cardinals. You know, Kent Summers and Darren Urban and Kyle Odegaard and myself, and that's really about it. If I'm leaving anybody out, apologies. But it's not like the Denver Broncos that have a whole setup here and they're following everybody around with 20, 30 people. It's not that way with Arizona. Some organizations you look at, a short time ago I saw Pete Carroll come through and there was a gaggle, you know, 20, 30 people that were there in that space wanting to follow him around. Steve Keim was just leaning up against the wall, and I went over and talked to him. There's nobody really around him, and it's no disrespect. It's just That's the organization, and they're not in a big media market. When Todd Bowles arrives here, it'll be a crazy scene. When Jason Garrett walks through here this afternoon, Paula, this place will go crazy for him. That's how it works. And so the access we get is great. They'll bring players in to us to meet and spend some time with, but you really get 15 minutes here up against a wall over there, a text message or two or five or 10, you hope, here or there. You meet an agent in the lobby. You meet a player rep over here. There's some people with Arizona State I saw on the flight out here that are here at the Combine. You hope to see DJ Foster and Christian Westerman and then Scooby Wright, of course, with the U of A. So there's always something happening. It's really a who's who here.
All right, Brad. Well, I'm counting on you to break some big story there. So go get aggressive. Go be tough.
That's Brad. That.
Yeah. All right, that is Brad Sesmet. We will be back. He is at the NFL Combine, and we'll have more here on Sports 360 AZ. This is the Brad Sesmet Show. Paula Bovin filling in for Brad Sesmet. I work for AZ Central Sports. You can hear this and see this show on azcentralsports.com, as well as it is streaming live on sports360az.com. And great checking in with Brad Sesmet out at the NFL Combine. But I am fascinated about a story that will not die here in town, and that is the long, sometimes sad, sometimes annoying tale of the Morris twins and the Suns. And clearly both of those players aren't with the team anymore. But this has become a national story. The last couple days, there's been a very long story on Bleacher Report about the Morris twins, as well as a couple other national media members have written about it. And it's interesting because it has become a very sympathetic story about the Morris twins. And we are obviously seeing something different here in town. We saw the antics of Markieff Morris, the things that were happening during the season, you know, getting in little shouting matches with Jeff Hornacek, towel throwing, shoving a teammate in Archie Goodwin. A lot of things going on. And so it's very interesting to me that this has now turned into these two guys have been misunderstood. As someone who has sort of watched this story up closely, I don't agree with that. While I think sometimes things are painted with a very broad stroke and maybe doesn't really capture the storyline, I don't think it is nearly as sympathetic as some of the national media is making out. And that, to me, has been very, very curious. I will tell you that I have been speaking with someone who is an executive at the Western Conference in the NBA. I do not want to share his name because he doesn't want this stuff going public. But he told me the other day that he is hearing from players and he is friends with a couple of these players. And the atmosphere here is very bad as far as players. He was told by one of the players that it felt like he was on an AAU club. And that's disappointing, I think, for the Suns, because for all the things that have gone wrong, you know, Morris stuff, a lot of that was on the Morrises. Some of the deals have obviously been on management. But there is clearly an issue with communication that I think needs to be solved, even if this is an organization that is going to land a very high draft pick, even if they start fixing personnel decisions. The bottom line is they need to fix the communication issue. And, you know, I've talked to Robert Sarver several times. I know he wants to fix this thing. I know that people are wrong when they say that Robert Sarver doesn't want to win. I think that's ridiculous. One, you know, he got into this business not only to make money, but that he wants to have a successful organization. So I don't buy that. But the bottom line is, when you have an owner who has never been a sports owner before, when you have a GM who is getting that job for the first time, and when you had a guy like Lon Babby, who was a terrific agent, but was then in charge of personnel decisions and hadn't done that before, I think it's a perfect storm of a mix of sort of talent at the management level that can't succeed. And I think they need to bring somebody in. And I don't know about you, Eric Sorensen, but for me, the communication issue seem like a prevailing storyline with this team. Every time a player left, they were bad-mouthing the organization.
And I don't know about you, but outside of Devin Booker, right, is there really a player on the Suns that is relatable to the fan base?
Right.
I mean, you had Amari, Steve Nash, Grant Hill, the core of the 7 seconds or less,
right,
who really attached themselves to the Valley. And right, it obviously helps when you're winning a lot of games. But there is sort of a lull, and the worst thing you can do as a pro franchise, especially in Phoenix,
right,
is be, what's the right word? Not even not important, just irrelevant.
Irrelevant, yeah.
And right now, the Suns are, for the most part, irrelevant. I mean, are you hearing from the people you're talking to that this is it for McDonough? Like, this could be...
There's a lot of speculation, but I also know that I think he has a good relationship with Robert Sarver. That's my understanding, and I think that's part of the reason they've kept him aboard. They like how he evaluates talent. I mean, I think when you look at sort of the draft and
he's drafted very well.
Right?
He's drafted very well. I mean, T.J. Warren, Alex Len, Devin Booker, some of the trades.
Right, right. Their biggest mistake was when their plan A didn't work, they didn't have a good plan B, and I think that blew up in their face. But, you know, it's interesting what you're saying about sort of just having players people can relate. You look at even the Coyotes, they've got Shane Doan. You look at baseball and the Diamondbacks, Paul Goldschmidt. He may not be, you know, Mr. Colorful Language, but he's such a great representative of that organization. You look at the Cardinals, Larry Fitzgerald. Everybody loves Larry Fitzgerald. And the Suns, just for whatever reason, don't have that guy. And... you know, I've talked with Brad about this many times, and I haven't done it before, but I find myself, just as a fan of sports, hoping this team loses so they have a shot at a terrific player from Louisiana State.
And the sad thing is, Paula, they're going to have a horrible year, and they're not going to get the first pick.
Right.
They have 14 wins. Philly has 8 wins. You still have the Lakers, who have a worse record. You still have the Nets, who are right there with the Suns. So the Suns could have one of their worst seasons in franchise history and still be sitting there with pick 4, pick 5, pick 3, and not have a shot at Ben Simmons. But getting back to what you said about those franchises, besides a player that people can attach themselves to, they also have a blueprint.
Right.
I mean, the Coyotes probably aren't going to make the playoffs, but at least there is a plan in place with Max Domi, some of the other guys they have. We saw what the Diamondbacks did this offseason. Tremendous upgrade to their starting pitching. The Cardinals are the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. I mean, the expectations going into next fall are that's really ramped up now. You make it to the NFC title game. If they don't at least get back to the NFC title game next year, probably going to be just a disappointment. And then you have the Suns.
Right.
Even ASU basketball, they're not super successful, but people are confident that Bobby Hurley is going to get the job done. U of A basketball speak for itself.
Right.
ASU football going through a little bit of a transition, but still, let's give Todd Graham a break. I mean, he had one bad season. And then you get to the Suns. I mean, they have an interim head coach. They have a really good rookie. They have a couple other pieces.
Right.
And that's about it. No one's watching. Very few fans are going to the games. It's sad to see what happened because the Suns, I've always argued for the longest time that the Suns are the Valley's darling.
Right.
Certainly now they're definitely not the darling.
But they can be. This community, like we've talked about, was a Suns community for so long. They want to be that again. As much as the Cardinals have taken over and they'll always be king, the NFL is king everywhere. But the Suns could still be so much a part of this community if they just show fans that they have some kind of vision. And the vision right now, I mean, to me, this is a huge couple months coming up with this organization. One, you've got to make a decision on a head coach. You know, is it going to be Earl Watson? Is he going to stick around, or are they going to make another decision? What's the situation with Ryan McDonough? I mean, do you stick with him? And my theory is if you don't fire McDonough, and I think you can make a case either way, bring along someone else who's part of that leadership committee who can have a connection with the players. Because this is a thing to me. And as I mentioned before, if you're having players tell other executives around the league that this, you know, they feel like they're playing on an AAU team, that's not a good sign. What that suggests is that there's poor communication. I think what players have really been bugged about when they've left here is they felt like the information hasn't been communicated to them very well. And listen, I understand this is a business. Eric, you've got to be able to, you know, you make a lot of money, you get traded. That's just how the NBA goes. But I think there's a way of doing things, and it sure sounds to me like the Suns haven't figured out that part of it. So I don't know. I mean, I think they're just going to have to get their act together, and I'd like to see them bring someone else along. So, all right, I'm ranting about the Suns, I know, but it's just the story won't go away. And if you have a chance, go online and check out some of these stories that have been written about them. There's one on Bleacher Report that paints a very sympathetic picture of the Morris twins, and make some sort of allegations of racism within the Arizona community. The Martin Luther King holiday is brought up as it's, you know, seems to be brought up every year. So interesting perspective there. We have got a great show coming up. As I mentioned, we're going to talk to Chip Lindsey, offensive coordinator for Arizona State. I'm so interested to hear what he says about some of the changes coming up, and we'll be checking back in with Brad Sussman at the NFL Combine. Speaking of Brad, this is his show, but I get to sit in. I'm Paula Bovin here on Sports 360 AZ. Welcome to that. Let's try that one again, folks. Welcome back to the Brad Sussman Show. That is what I'm trying to say. I'm Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, filling in for Brad today, who is getting all the scoops out at the NFL Combine and in Indianapolis, hopefully not having to watch a bunch of guys walk around in their boxers, which I've heard that's what happens at the Combine. I have never been there. I love that. That thing is a made-for-TV event, by the way. I love metrics. I love measurement. I like to know, you know, how tall guys who's jumping the highest, who's running the fastest. It's good stuff. So,
and believe it or not, Paula, not to intervene real quick, but you don't see any of that.
You don't?
No.
I know you've been out there a couple times.
No, you see nothing. You sit in a lobby and they bring the players and coaches and GMs through, and then they walk down a real long hallway and they go through a curtain and they vanish into the bowels, for lack of a better term, for Lucas Oil Stadium, and you don't see them.
That's good. Well, I'm glad about that part.
You're not like, you don't have a measuring stick.
Good,
you're not looking over like a scale, seeing how much these guys weigh. You don't have a stopwatch down the field. You see none of that when you cover the combine.
I had this whole.
The great thing is, like I told Brad before he left, it's like going to a sporting event and not being able to see the event.
Great.
It'd be like covering the Super Bowl and watching the Super Bowl from a room.
Wow, that's fun.
You don't see the field. You see monitors with the field, but you never see the field.
You never see the field.
You're not allowed back.
You get to talk to the people, and that's why
this
Brad's
is true.
There. That's good
yep.
stuff. By the way, did you see? And I wish I remember who the player was. The tweets the other day from an NFL player talking about some of the stupid questions.
I did. I saw the story. I didn't read the story, but I did see the story, and I saw your tweet yesterday. Like, I guess he was asked by one player.
Do you find your mother attractive?
How do you answer that? You would have you would have to say yes, right? Yes,
yeah,
I find my mother to be a very attractive.
I don't know. See, I don't know if you go there. I think maybe they want you to say, oh, I don't know. I don't think about it. Because otherwise, maybe that makes you sound creepy if you find your mother attractive. I don't know. But these are weird questions about,
Brad.
Just from scouts and stuff like that are asking players. And I was really surprised. Oh, the other one popular is, you know,
Jarrett.
Do you ever want to murder somebody if you're mad enough? Have you ever had that feeling? And would you do it if you couldn't get caught? I don't know. Clearly, there's some issues in the NFL. There are players who are in jail, blah, blah, blah. But some of those questions sound really twisted. All right. I want to get off football for a second and talk a little baseball. And just before I got on the show, I had the opportunity to talk to Ken Kendrick. And I had not spoken with him in a while. And, you know, Eric, talk about owners who've sort of changed their image. He's been very much behind the scenes, the owner of the Diamondbacks. He used to be a guy that was more visible. And I think, as Derek Hall, the team president, has said, once Ken sort of gets comfortable with a business he's in, he steps back and steps behind the scenes. And I think that's exactly what's happened. And I was talking to him because coming up in a couple of weeks, he's going to have his baseball card collection displayed at the Phoenix Art Museum. And if you have followed this at all, he has literally the best baseball card collection in the world. I mean, he's got the Honus Wagner card. He's got some very rare Jackie Robinson cards, and he's agreed to sort of have these on display. But when I talked to him, I was asking him what made the decision to go with this Greinke deal, because I was talking to Chip Hale, the Diamondbacks manager, the other day, and he was telling me he was sitting in a room with some people. They got the news about Zach Greinke coming to the Diamondbacks, and he couldn't believe it. He thought it was a joke. The amount of money the Diamondbacks agreed to spend is fascinating, says a lot about this organization. And a lot of it, he told me, had to do with the TV deal. He had always said that once the Diamondbacks got the right amount of money, once this TV deal went through and they had the money to spend, he would spend it. And he is a man of his word to that regard, because no one was spending that money on Zach Greinke, but the Diamondbacks did. So there is, I think there is an example of an owner who's kind of changed his image. He spent a lot of money. He stepped behind the scenes. You don't hear very much from him now. If you hear anything about the Diamondbacks, it's Derek Hall speaking about it. So I don't know. Maybe there's hope for Robert Sarver and the image change. But I just think it's interesting that you can kind of reinvent yourself the way that he has. And I've been around spring training a couple different places the last couple days. Been over to the Diamondbacks, went to a Cactus League event. The Diamondbacks, Eric, are the buzz right now of the Cactus League because of what happened in the offseason. And considering what this team has gone through the last couple years, it's pretty amazing how that's changed.
It is. And it's also amazing that I never, ever thought spring training would become such, not just a circus, but right. such a popular place to be. I mean, we were talking on the show last week about how if you want to go see a San Francisco Giants spring training game,
right.
spring training game, you're going to be prepared to shell out between $75 and $125 bucks to get a seat. To watch a bunch of guys wearing jerseys 60, 72, 85, and 44, and then see other players run around the track in the outfield. I mean, it's great for our economy. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
It's awesome.
It is.
You can tell just by driving around. Everyone is swelled to the valley. It's that time of year. So,
and if anybody's tried to get a plane ticket around this time into Phoenix, it's ridiculous. It's so expensive. It raises an interesting question. You're talking about the money that's being spent. And this was addressed at a Cactus League event a couple days ago. Major League Baseball sounds like it's going to step in now and to a certain extent require teams to have an X amount of their decent players available during games and actually competing. Because I know sometimes fans have gone to spring training games. They feel like most of the squad isn't there. Guys are being pulled after the first inning. It looks like Major League Baseball is going to look at that a little bit. Because the reality is the spring training tickets, as Eric alluded to, are not cheap. I have a friend who works at the ticket office at Mesa for the Cubs facility, which is a beautiful one. And those games obviously are selling out, and they cost a lot of money. So for me to, you know, I love the Cactus League. I love the accessibility for fans at spring training. There's not many times you get to sit, you know, that close. They interact with fans. But it's starting to get a little bit of, I think fans are getting a little bit priced out of these games. So I think it's a good idea that Major League Baseball is looking into, you know, making sure some of their top players are playing in these games, at least a certain amount of innings, because it's going to make a difference. I think if this momentum that the Valley has with the Cactus League is going to continue. I was in the Diamondbacks clubhouse yesterday morning, and it was so funny because there you have a player who had a whiteboard out who is sharing physics with his teammates because, you know, they're trying to educate the players. So that clubhouse right now seems really loose. I think there's a lot of excitement, you know, not just outside with fans, but I think the players inside feels like there's something special going on. It was a very light environment. Expectations are crazy. I think sometimes that can come back to bite a team. I think the most important thing for Chip Hale right now is to manage those expectations. And he even talked about that the other day, that for all the excitement about this team, they're going to have to manage those expectations. So, God, you know, I'm just so happy as a sports writer in this town, though, that we can be excited about a baseball team again, that people are talking about the Diamondbacks. So, good time to be in the Valley. We've got all the excitement with the Suns, the NFL storyline. That one is never ending. And we've got ASU football. Is this the year that they finally turn the corner after this last not so successful below 500 year after a couple of good ones? We're going to talk to Chip Lindsey, the offensive coordinator at ASU, coming up here next on Sports360AZ.com. Welcome back to the show. A lot of changes this past season with ASU football. A lot of staff defections causing a lot of angst, I think, among fans. But I know they're excited about their new offensive coordinator, and we're going to get a chance to talk to Chip Lindsey now. Chip, when you came into town, what was it you liked that made you want to take this job? What did you see within this organization?
Well, I think, you know, obviously Coach Graham is the number one thing. You know, the success these guys have had here, I mean, it's, you know, kind of been – amazing in the 4 years he's been here, the things that they've done here, and compared to the history of the program, I think it's pretty impressive. And the opportunity to come work for him, I think his values and mine were aligned very well. And, you know, the opportunity to get in a great conference like the Pac-12 and playing one of the best conferences in the league, I mean, in the country, I think is also attractive. And then, you know, philosophically or offensively is basically on the same page. So I thought it was just a great fit and an exciting challenge.
Chip, at Southern Miss, where you came from, I think they're averaging over 40 points a game, one of the top 15 in the in college football Division I. What we saw at Southern Miss, is it going to be similar to what we'll see this upcoming season at ASU as far as style of offense?
Yeah, definitely. We're going to, you know, the number one thing we did at Southern Miss, and even when I was at Auburn in 13, and Coach Graham and those guys have done it at Tulsa and everywhere they've been, is build the offense around your playmakers. I think that's the number one thing you do, and starts with your quarterback and his skill set and what he's able to do. And I think that's what you have to do in any offense. And it'll be very similar to, I think, what we did at Southern Miss, and, you know, maybe a little different catered to our quarterback, whoever wins that job. But it's based on the same principles and the same parameters that have always been here at Arizona State and what they've been successful doing.
Well, Chip, since you opened that door about the quarterbacks, I know that's for fans, that's a big storyline coming into the season. How much did you sort of look into, when you're looking at this job, the talent level at quarterback? I know there's a lot of good young talent here. Did that fit into the equation at all when you were deciding about taking this job?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I took the job because of Coach Graham in Arizona State, not, you know, because of a person or a player or anything like that. I do think we got some quality guys here that are pretty good players. They've done a really good job recruiting. And obviously, you know, at the end of the day, you know, sometimes the guy that's the highly rated guy sometimes doesn't play the most. You know, it's all about who moves the team and who leads the team the best and so forth. But I like where we're at. I like the guys we have, and I think it's been fun to get to know these guys and looking forward to a great spring.
Well, and Taylor Kelly was one of the guys at ASU who everybody had at the bottom and worked his way up and won that job, which was a great example of what you were talking about. What are the things you're going to be looking for from the Manny Wilkins and all these guys that are competing? What will you be looking this spring to see?
Yeah, I think it'll be really who leads our team the best, you know, who does the things that you want your quarterback to do the most consistently. And it's not who's got the best arm, and it's not who's the tallest, and it's not who's the fastest guy. It's the guy that has all the intangibles. If you look at all the great quarterbacks all over the country and the NFL or wherever you've been, the guys that can lead the team, that have the respect of the team, that represent, you know, what you want from that position. And because, you know, whether they like it or not, they're naturally a leader, and they're in the position to represent our team and our university. And so the guy that does the best job with that and has the most production will be our quarterback, and our team will believe in that guy, and it'll be an exciting challenge to see how that plays out, but also a lot of fun. I know all three guys are raring to go.
And I'm always fascinated when I see either coaches or players that have had experience with a national championship team, because you kind of pick something up from that, almost like through osmosis. I think that can benefit another team. You were with that Auburn team in 2013. What were some of the valuable lessons you learned about how to get to that point?
Yeah, I think it was a unique year. You know, early in the year, we inherited a team that had been 3-9 or the year before, and really a lot of those guys were back, and it was just a really neat thing to see how our team evolved throughout the year and improved each week. And I think our guys, our staff, did a really good job of figuring out what our guys were good at, and we just tried to do those things and do them over and over and over. And by the end of the year, we had a really good team. And those guys believed, too, and they came in, you know, they believed in the staff, they believed in each other, and it kind of all came together for us, you know, toward the end of the year. And I think the thing you take from that 13 season is A, you know, make sure that you set your goals and your beliefs there, and your team buys into it, and then, you know, build it around your players. And we did that, I thought.
It's been fascinating storyline watching Todd Graham at ASU. When he came and took this job, there were so many people, you know, questioning his loyalties because he had changed jobs a couple times, called him a little bit of a snake oil salesman because he, you know, he can talk a good game. He did pretty amazing things here the first 3 years at ASU. Obviously, they struggled this past season. Why are you such a believer in him, Chip?
Well, I mean, just knowing who he is and what he stands for, and I don't know that going to a bowl is a struggle. I mean, the guy's won more games here than I think a lot of people in a short amount of time. I just think Coach Graham brings a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm, and he's obviously raised the bar pretty high here from the expectations I think before. And I think any good football coach is going to sell his program and sell his beliefs like he's done, and I think he's done an excellent job of that. I know our players are excited about that. And, you know, winning football games is not easy. I mean, it's not. You know, it's people think, well, it's just easy to win 10 games or whatever. it takes some luck. It takes some you know, not being injured. And, you know, I think he's done an excellent job here of setting a foundation. I mean, if you look at the total program and what we've done academically here and improved that tremendously, and then what we're doing from a facility standpoint, and I mean, it's more than just winning games. You know, it's a huge part of it. I think you look at what he's done here is pretty amazing.
You're right. Certainly the academics, the discipline was a big issue before he came, and it's the way players act, the way they, you know, even simple things as cleaning up the locker room after they're on a road game. Those kind of things matter, I know, and he's made a big difference in that regard. You mentioned the facilities, Chip. I know what you're seeing now is a lot of dirt and bulldozers there at Sun Devil Stadium. Do you get a sense that you're going to be impressed with the finished product? Have you seen the some of the pictures?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's kind of scary thinking we're going to play here in September.
Right.
But it is. I mean, obviously, you know, one of the things we're doing in recruiting is talking through that, you know, our facilities we think are going to be as good as anybody in the country. And, you know, I think that'll take us to a whole different level when that's finished. And, you know, that's what's amazing. I mean, you're talking about, you know, going to that facility we're going to have, and you know, I mean, it's hard. I mean, to be a head coach and come in and get all that going, I mean, you got to get everybody believing in what you're about and what you're doing. And you know, he's done an unbelievable job of that, and I think it's going to pay off for us in the future.
I know, in so many ways, recruiting is a 365-day business. How challenging is the transition of you know, you're recruiting in a different part of the country before, and obviously. Mm-hmm. All of you guys kind of recruit nationally, but how much of a challenge is it to make that sort of regional jump in the recruiting world?
Oh, I don't think it's that big of a challenge, really. I mean, you know, it's all about building relationships, and I think if you're a genuine and a good person, and you know, I meet people every day that I didn't know before and end up being really close with them. I think you have to just continue to build relationships. We obviously do recruit everywhere. I mean, our base though is going to be Arizona and California, Southern Cal, really. And I did have some experience doing some of the Southern California stuff, you know, because even at Southern Miss, recruiting junior college guys and, you know, in California and quarterbacks nationally, we always did that as well. So hadn't been a huge transition. It's been a lot of fun to get to know some new people and go to some different places and a lot of quality football players in Arizona and California.
Great stuff, Chip. I know people are excited about what they're going to see from ASU next year. I know they wanted sort of a new look to the offense, or at least a new offensive coordinator to give a different perspective. We appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
It's Chip Lindsey, ASU's offensive coordinator. We'll be back here on Sports 360 AZ.